Welcome back to the Godly Young Men Podcast. This is episode 89. We are grateful for you joining us, either listening on your favorite podcast platform or watching on YouTube. We've got what will be a very enjoyable episode for me and Joe. We are talking books. We're talking reading, but don't turn it off. Don't turn it off just yet. Obviously, we've had an episode about the value of reading before, but Joe had a really good idea for this episode where he thought about what if we took the five, we ended up having to do seven, most impactful books that we've ever read and just talked about them. Because obviously, if they've impacted us, we would argue that they're probably going to impact you. And so maybe if you're wanting to get into reading or maybe looking for some book recommendations, that you will purchase some of these or you know, look into some of these at least. These are, we chose these books for a reason. We're going to get into those. We've got some questions we're going to look at for each book. But yeah, so this is just kind of a top seven list of, in no particular order, what are some of the books that have most impacted us. So from an introductory standpoint, Joe, what do you have to add?
As you're going to notice, the Bible is not here. Of course, the Bible.
I was gonna just bring the Bible and say, well, "This is the most influential book for me."
Do you need any other? Do you need it? No.
Yes. Goes without saying.
Correct. It goes without saying. So please, nobody be like, "Well, what about the Bible?" Yes, the Bible is obviously number one, and that will always maintain, and that will stay number one. That is the most impactful book in all of history.
Make my top seven, like Matthew, Mark, Luke. Yeah,
exactly. Or well. I think it's probably like number six on my list of most important.
Yeah, obviously not.
Obviously, it's number one. We're talking about different things, you know, different books that throughout time have impacted us. I'm going to kind of walk, there's reasons for each of mine, and walk through maybe the earliest up to, not the most recent per se, but the one that matters most to me right now as it stands. And so it's that's kind of how I've structured it a little bit. Yeah, I was going to joke that we'll just make this a manuscript and you can read the transcript of this. And,
there you go.
Get that reading in. But
so go through the questions we're going to ask real fast.
Why is this impactful? And underneath that is like, how has this changed your life? How has this impacted you? And key takeaways from the book, like why should someone go out and buy it? So we don't have infinite wealth. We are giving you 14 different books. Yeah, it could get expensive. We may just give you some ideas. You don't have to buy these things, but these are the ones. And I would encourage you actually to make your own list. If you're not a big reader, your list is going to be rather short. If you're not, start reading. If you are, what books have impacted you? I'd love to know everybody else's list, books that really stood out to them. We'll kind of give that at the end as well.
Since we have 14 books to go through as well, we'll probably move a little quick. I mean, that's about 2 minutes a book.
Correct.
So I might not answer every single question on here, but just kind of why this book that we brought makes this episode is, I think, the biggest thing.
And what we can gain out of this.
Yes,
and so I am going to start on that.
Go for
that's
it.
Okay.
Number one.
This is a goofy one, and for those that have parents that are against this, sorry. Harry Potter, the very first Harry Potter, and you go, are you serious? That's the most impactful. I've read, I think, hundreds of books at this point. This is impactful for a very specific reason, which is
I
hated reading until I opened this book. I'd read a couple things, but we're talking like small things that it was drudgery. Find a book that gets you to love reading. That is the point of this. It does not, you don't have to go out and buy Harry Potter, the Sorcerer's Stone, but find a book that's going to give you a deep love of reading. And yes, it was a fiction book in this case. Every other book that I've read since really started with this because of how much I learned to love it. So key takeaways from the book, a young boy named Harry at 11 goes, That's really why it's on my list, and the only thing I would say from that, this is why it's going to go a lot faster in 2 minutes, is just start reading whatever book series that's going to be for you, whatever, if that's a, most of the time it's probably not going to be a nonfiction. A lot of times when you're young, it's going to be a fiction book that just, it really pulls you in, right? It's this strong pull to say, I got to go read that more. I'd get in trouble staying up late reading these books, and mom would be like, you have to put it down. It's just so good. It's page turner. Find something that makes you love reading.
Yeah, so I think just very briefly, that would be, there's some old, like written a long time ago, mystery books called The Hardy Boys.
Yep.
That was for me what really got me into reading, and they were all kind of Boxcar Children, A to Z mysteries. Like that was, of course, when I was like, you know, 8, 9 years old reading those, but that definitely inspired my love of reading. So I really like that you included that one, even though, you know, from a, like, I don't know, practical standpoint, it's like, what have you learned from Harry Potter?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Not a lot, but as far as impact goes, it was very impactful.
I've read all seven books at least 12 times in my life.
Oof.
Stupid. Why in the world would
but
you do
love
that?
Reading.
I loved reading it, and every time where I started to hate reading, I'd get back into it, and it'd reinvigorate
there
my love,
go.
And then I'd start reading the rest of the books, and so I always had a focal point to come back to.
All right, so my number one,
of course,
cliche,
of
I
course.
Know, but there's a specific reason for it. Convicted, Dr. Brad Hare, of course, my dad. The reason that I wanted to include this one is because I spent my entire childhood traveling with my dad, listening to his creation evolution seminars, and I got such an incredible foundation for how I can know that the Bible is inspired, how I can know God exists, how I can know Jesus walked the earth, the age of the earth, the answers for dinosaurs, all these things that are just, they have just made, in my, from my perspective, given me such a rock solid faith foundation of like, I know that there's reasons for why I believe what we believe because I've listened to my dad's seminars. Well, then he put it in a book. And so it's like, this is influenced my thinking and impacted me in a significant way, just in the form of seminars, listening to him for 10, 15 years, and then it being put into a book. And so that's why it's impactful. That's why it's changed my life. Key takeaways. I mean, he, 20 chapters of just all kind of stuff that, again, are just going to shore up your faith. Why does God allow evil, pain, and suffering? That one's in here. What about the Ice Age, the Flood, tackling evolution, or attacking, rather, evolution, and like just so many things. And so it is a masterpiece of an apologetics book, and probably more than any of these, it has influenced my thinking just in the sense of like I've never questioned believing in God. I've never questioned the Bible being inspired, and it's because of the information presented in this book. And so that's why someone should buy it. Focuspress.org, of course, shameless plug, but it's fantastic.
I honestly thought about putting that one on my list. This is, I've read plenty of apologetics. I've looked at all that stuff. In my opinion, this is one of the, if not the best apologetics book out on the market. And the reason why is because of its comprehensive nature. It's ease of reading. It is not
it's very readable.
It's very readable, very good. So yes, we're spending a little time on this, but seriously, we don't always tie this to Focus Press. We are a Focus Press podcast, for those that may listen and not know. Presented by Focus Press. We don't say that all the time, but you know, our company that and Brad owns,
it's our highest selling product, Dr. Herod.
Yes, and by far, it's fantastic. If you don't have a copy, go pick yourself up a copy. That will be, I think that will be on your favorites list because I almost added it on mine. It's that impactful.
Yeah, you're number two.
All right, number two. Open by Craig Gross. I used to think it was Gross because it's like there's no way the guy's last name is Gross talking about porn addiction, sure but enough. It really is Gross. Craig Gross, creator of X3 Watch, X3 Pure. I did that 30-day intensive on or online thing for getting out of porn addiction. What happens when you get real, get honest, and get accountable? I read this, I think I was 18, coming out of Bear Valley, 18, 19 years old, and I read it with three other guys that wanted to start an accountability group. We read this together. This is what impacted me so much to get out of account or to get out of pornography addiction because I realized what I really need to do is get open. What I really need to do is establish this accountability group. When we read it, it really gave us a good understanding of how to be accountable, how to have this, to run a group and things like that, and the importance of being open. So is it the best book I've ever read on the subject? Maybe not, but I do think it's the most impactful because of where it took place in my life. And it was such a revolutionary idea of like, you can actually tell people about this. You can actually get open. So those are the key takeaways, is it's going to go into the accountability, accountability being safety, what does accountability require, you know, being honest, things like that, and why that's so important in small groups. And I mean, there's just so many things, reputation ruined. And like, if you are struggling with pornography, you're struggling with getting accountable and being honest with your life, read Open by Craig Gross.
I like it. Very good. All right, we're going to keep going. My number two, The Holiness of God by R.C. Sproul. I read this when I was 17, I want to say. My dad had put together a list of, hey, these are the books that I really want you to read before you leave my house, before you get married and all that. Didn't read the whole list, but Holiness of God was on there, and so I kind of just dove into it. Qualifier, R.C. Sproul is not Church of Christ, and there's some things that he believes that I certainly do not. But when it comes to a book on describing the holiness of God, it's a pure masterclass. It is outstanding. And for me, why it was so impactful is because I'd grown up in the church my entire life and obviously knew what kind of, I thought I knew what holiness was about, and yeah, God is holy, all that. Reading this book really opened my eyes to like what the word holy even means, what just how much holier God is than just the idea of, oh yeah, God's holy, sure, whatever. No, like he goes into such depth, gets into Isaiah 6, talking about holy, holy, holy there. And the fact that Isaiah is just so ashamed to even be in God's presence because of his holiness, goes into it so much. And I think it was once again, just kind of my first awakening to like, oh, that's the God I serve. That's the holy God that I serve. And it obviously gets into, or for me, it got into the, I was started thinking about, okay, what does that mean that I need to be holy? And so real impactful read for me at 17. It's been a long time since I've read it, and so I would love to read it again, but when I was making this, putting this list together, I was like, this one's probably got to be on there just from the sense of like, from a pure spiritual book, a book about just truly how holy God is definitely made the list. So Holiness of God, R.C. Sproul definitely makes my list.
I love it. I love it. I'm going to have to, you know, I've never actually read that one.
No way.
I know. I've really got to read it. Jack's talked about it a bunch. You talked about it a bunch.
Well, so. And just real fast, I would say the holiness of God can be something that's like, man, that's pretty deep, pretty heavy. Once again, there's some heavy stuff in there, like very heavy conceptual things, but it's still very readable. It's still very
That's the thing with all of these books is I'm not the type to just absolutely choose through the most boring stuff. It's like, oh, but it's really books, good. Yeah. Like, look, man, if we're giving you a recommendation, trust me, I'm not the biggest reader in the world where the words are tiny and it's as
800 pages,
dense as possible. Like John Piper, his Desiring God. He's a Calvinist. I don't agree with a lot of what his stuff is, but he's got some really good points in there. I think he's made some good points. I would actually probably discourage people from reading it at this point just because of the Calvinism. But at one time I read it. It's so much to chew through. You'd read through like five pages and be like, I need to
He's hard to read.
Yeah. He's hard to read. They're just authors that are difficult to read. I find that each one of these is a page turner. I'm definitely going to pick that one up. I've heard so many good things about it that and R.C. Sproul is so good in so many ways. He's also a Calvinist. So yes, as Will gave that. But
spit out the bones, yeah.
He spit out the bones. My
turn. Oh, I need to read this
one. Of course. You have not read it, Tom?
No, I need to read it. We're going
to
trade.
Now I was going to say, my turn to be shocked, I suppose. This is fantastic. So talked about it before. Power of Habit from Charles Duhigg is great. I think Atomic Habits beats that one hands down, and a lot of other people do. One of the best, biggest sellers in the world. We're on to, I think, several million copies at this point. But I've read through this at least a couple times. Read through this one. This is fantastic. It's about setting up habits. It's about you being a better person. Like, and Will, I think you referenced this episode or two ago. It may have been two episodes. How you view yourself is so important. So when you're talking about, I'm a healthy person, you may be overweight, but it's like, I'm a healthy person, and healthy people make healthy choices. Mm-hmm. Instead of, I'm not healthy at all, but I'm really hoping to get healthy. Well, the person who's not healthy now makes the non-healthy choice.
We were talking about it in the terms of like, I'm godly, so I do these things.
Exactly. It's how you frame your mind. He goes into that. He goes into,
it's really good.
You know, all sorts of stuff. The dopamine feedback loop. He goes into making them irresistible, how to break a bad habit. Good choices, how choices build on one another, the 2-minute rule. Like, if you have not read this, you have to read Atomic Habits. This is a big one in the culture for a reason. There's a reason he sold multi-million.
So it's worth the hype, you're saying?
It's worth the hype. Go read it.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to get into my next one. I'm going to move quickly through this one because I've talked about it a lot. Number three for me, again, no particular order, but is Point Man by Steve Farrar. This one was on my dad's list. Read it. I was 17, 18. I think Rachel was in my life at this point when I read it. So I had to have been 18 at the time. And it's funny, like, growing up, listening, I'm referencing my dad a lot in this episode, but listening to his talks, and obviously being a good husband, being a good father was a central talking point for us in the home. But why this impacted me so much is I read it, and it was a serious wake-up call to the duty of what being a father and a husband really is. And again, it's not like I didn't know that, but it was a serious wake-up call. He talks about the idea that you as the husband and father are the point man for your family, meaning you have to go clear the way and make sure there's no enemies in your territory, make sure there's no obstacles for your family to get over. Like, that is your job. And so you as a man have to be locked in. You've got to be focused. You can't be getting distracted. It's fantastic. He talks about the idea of being a one-woman kind of man. If you can only read one chapter, read that one, where he takes a baseball bat to the idea of like flirtatious men and guys that are, you know, but I'm never going to do anything, but I'll, you know, cast the glances. Like, he absolutely obliterates that whole mindset of like, you need to be a one woman kind of man. And once you find that woman, enough, be done with it. And so, yeah, as an 18-year-old, it was very impactful for me. And I, once again, been a while, I need to go back and reread it, but I would strongly encourage any young man that is wanting to get married and start a family, you got to read this book. It's fantastic.
It's good stuff.
Have you read this one?
I have not read that. No.
We got to trade this.
Seriously, we got to. I'm just going to give you the stack of books. Have you read Harry Potter?
No. My list.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we're going to have to trade lists. Convicted, obviously.
My next book we've both read, but that might be the only one that we've both read.
Well, here you go. This is actually my old copy. I could not find my updated copy on this. That's okay. The 7 Principles to Making Marriage Work, or for Making Marriage Work, rather. John Gottman, I think Julie, his wife, they're both PhDs, so Dr. Gottman, I should say, they are the foremost marriage experts in the world. They run the Love Lab up in Seattle. You look at it and go, well, you're a therapist, of course. No, no, no. If you're going to get married, I like push this in my premarital counseling with everybody. You have to get this book. It's incredibly practical. It's incredibly helpful. He has love maps where, you know, you go in and ask a bunch of, there's like yes or no questions. How much do you know your spouse? The true or false. That way you can kind of understand, like, where does my partner fall on this? Solve problems, the four horsemen of the apocalypse of what you really should avoid, things like stonewalling and contempt and things like that that can destroy a marriage. He goes into just invaluable truths like yelling doesn't mean you have a bad marriage. Sometimes that's how people communicate. It's actually those who go silent, who stop talking. That's where when you know a marriage is really in trouble. You know, it's basic, but it's just like, it really helps you understand and get a grasp on marriage. If I could suggest any marriage book for any couple, actually more than any biblical one that I've read those two. He is I think he's Jewish. Him and his wife are Jewish. I don't agree with all his stuff. He's now doing more LGBTQ stuff I don't agree with. So it's not like blanket, hey, go out and check out all John Gottman stuff. This is an absolute must for those who are married or who are thinking of getting married soon. Seven Principles for Making Marriage Work.
Love it. Awesome stuff. All right, my number four. Once again, Joe and I both read this one, The 5 a.m. Club. This was a more recent
good stuff.
One. Those three I've read. It's been quite a few years now. But The 5 a.m. Club I read earlier this year. And not religious whatsoever, nothing spiritual about it. But, man, talk about a kick in the pants when it comes to, like, being, we just had an episode, being structured with your day, and that is literally what this entire book is about.
Oh, yeah.
Getting your morning started off 5 a.m. He's, you know, the 5 to 6 hour where the world is asleep and you are instead being productive. You're exercising for the first 20 minutes. You are then doing something kind of spiritual, meditating. Obviously, for us, it would be praying or Bible reading or whatever for the next 20 minutes. And then you're journaling or you're meditating for the last 20 minutes of that 5 to 6 hour and just getting yourself set up to have the most productive way, the most productive day that you can have. The subtitle is Own Your Morning and Elevate Your Life. It's a fascinating book because it's not just a typical self-help book in the sense of like, hey, here's what you should do. It tells a story and it gives the principles in a narrative type way where there's characters that are going through this story and there's a love story attached to it and all these things. You know, maybe a little cheesy, but at the end of the day, It was super impactful for me in the sense of like, man, I've got to get it together when it comes to my day, when it comes to my morning. And I think the one complaint I would have with it, Joe and I have talked about it, it's a little bit idealistic in the sense of like he maps out every hour and says, hey, this is how you need to spend it. And it's like, okay, that's great if you have the standard job. If you don't, it doesn't work. But the principles of get your rear end out of bed, get your blood pumping with exercise, read and put away your screens. It's fantastic for getting your day structured. And so, as again, we just had an episode about it. Very impactful for me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great book. It, like you said, a little goofy. Little goofy on the story. Little idealistic. They don't have kids. That's a big one. Like, kids will throw a wrench in the 5 a.m. club. But by and large, the way he writes it in the narrative is goofy. But you start picking up on, like, well, that's weird. Why would he say it that way? Because I remember it.
Yeah. Like that's what I think makes it different than any. Yes. Like, there's probably a lot of that I wouldn't remember if it was just your standard self-help book.
Correct.
But that, and there's not much religion base to it. So he doesn't write from that perspective. But if you can just apply some of the principles, even if not all of them, you'll be
so
way
good.
Ahead.
I would highly recommend it. It's very, very good. Next one for me is a parenting book that I read, actually. I need to go back and reread this. It has been a while. This is Paul David Tripp's Parenting, just called Parenting, 14 Gospel Principles That Can Radically Change Your Family. I've read a lot of parenting books as well, partially for my job, partially because I just enjoy reading the parenting books. Whole Brain Child's great, No Drama Discipline, I think those are the same authors. Those are really good ones. Non-Christian. There are some really good Christian ones, Dr. Dobson, Raising Up Boys. Things that are good. This one to me is fantastic. Fantastic. Because, and I got the contents open. He goes into this concept of parents being ambassadors. You are merely trying to get your kids back to God. You are ambassadors for God on his behalf to your children. And so the calling, the grace, law, inability, identity process. He hits grace really hard on this, but not gentle parenting, grace-based in terms like you let your kids get away with everything. He gives a full structure. Now, if you're looking for ultra, ultra practical, just tell me how to do this. It's less about that. It's more of the theory of getting parenting correct, of your getting your mindset set toward God, and how your parenting really is to be an extension of the way God parents us. And he just, again, 14 gospel principles. The gospel is throughout it. Please, if you are parents, new parents, I guess older parents, but this is really for the new parents or the people that aren't parents yet, go out and pick this one up. I would highly recommend it. Again, I don't agree with Paul David Tripp on everything, but this book has been incredibly impactful in how my wife and I have, because she read it too, how we've approached our parenting through a grace-based, gospel-based method.
Another one I need to read. I have not read
that one.
All right, my number five at this point, I had another apologetics book. I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. This one's a non-Focus Press work, so there are books out there that are good that are not Focus Press. I know it's a surprise. but I don't have enough faith to be an atheist. It's by Norman L. Geisler and Frank Turek. I read this one 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago now at this point. And the reason why this one was so impactful is because while, you know, Convicted was apologetics and covers a lot of that, and I kind of already knew, this book took it from the perspective of, like, let's talk about just how crazy of an intellectual idea it is to not believe in God. And I think that's what I had never really thought about before. Of like, it takes it in the sense of, like, okay, take it from the atheist perspective. Here's what you'd have to believe if you don't believe in the Bible, believe in God. And it, there's so many good things. Once again, this one's a little bit longer of a book, about 400 pages or so, but pretty readable. But it talks about just the idea of truth itself. It talks about the argument for design, the moral argument when it comes to Hitler, Mother Teresa. It examines, it goes in depth on the evidence for Jesus walking the earth. It goes in depth into the top 10 reasons we know the New Testament writers told the truth. How do we know Jesus really rose from the dead? It lays it out in such a point, or such a fashion to, once again, the impact is when I finished the book, I was like, I don't see how I could ever, even if I wanted to go jump off the deep end and live for myself and carouse and live, you know, live like the prodigal son, I can't argue with anything in this book about, again, Jesus rising from the dead or why we can, you know, the design that we see in the universe. It's like, it lays it out to the point where it's like, I don't see how you argue with it. And so, fantastic book. I would highly recommend it. If, once again, it's much more apologetics than some of these other ones we've been talking about, but for your, if you're a godly young man, read it. I think it'll shore up your faith in, once again, God, Jesus, the Bible, a whole lot more.
I don't think I've ever read that one either.
It's really good.
So I'm going to have to check that one out. My sixth, I think we're on. My brother wrote a great book, Church Reset. I thought about including that one. This is what kicked the thinking off for me, and I believe he suggested it for me. This is what got his mind turning on it. He had run across these things, but Total Church by Tim Chester, Steve Timmis, a radical reshaping around gospel and community. So his book, it's Jack has done a fantastic job. He's got the consumeristic mindset. He goes into that a lot more in the potluck. And Jack has a lot of
church,
things that are original.
I like you said what it's called. Church Reset.
Church Reset.
It's called, yeah.
Church Reset is my brother's book. This is kind of the original one for us that we saw. There's a couple different ones. Gospel Comes with a House Key. This is fantastic. This Total Church. These guys are over in the UK and they have established these basically home churches. They do baptize for remission of sins. I don't agree with everything that they do. I think they have instruments or something like that. So we don't agree with those things. But at the same time, they're exploding. They've already established three or four. I mean, at the time of this writing, I think they'd established three different ones that were growing in the UK. That's as dead as a doornail over there, religiously. But it's their approach to it of, hey, we're going to be a family and we're going to actually be a real church, a church family, rather than the consumeristic, though that's more Jack's terminology as he uses it for Church Reset. But Total Church was a game changer for us in terms of, like, Jack's tagline. I keep plugging it, but, like, shouldn't church be more? This is the one that really started asking that question for me, and I think for us as well, or for him as well. So I would go and pick up Total Church. I'd pick up Jack's Church Reset. That's a great one.
Pick them both up.
Pick them both up, but this one is what kind of got our thinking going on that.
Awesome. My number six is a marriage book, and as we were putting this together, I kind of realized, like, Joe's library and reading library is much more extensive than mine. I have not read, as much as I like to read, I have not read a ton. I think this is, like, the maybe one of three marriage books that I've ever read. It's Cherish by Gary Thomas. It's definitely the best one I've ever read. Again, I have not read a lot, but when it comes to, like, marriage books. But this one, again, Cherish by Gary Thomas. My wife and I read this one. I think my dad actually sent this one to both of us and said, hey, two copies for both y'all. Y'all need to read it. And what stuck out about this one is I had never thought about what it truly meant to cherish your spouse. I knew what it meant to love my spouse. I knew what it meant to you know, show her that I care about her and show her love and everything. But he really goes into what it means to cherish your spouse and practical ways to do that and kind of the why behind it. And read this one. I think it was during COVID that we actually sat down, both of us, when we were quarantined, and we read this one. But very biblical. I don't think he's a church of Christ or anything like that. But the idea of just cherishing your spouse and what that looks like in everyday life and how that there's like a compound growth to it, in the sense of like if you spend every day not just loving your spouse but truly cherishing your spouse, and you do that every day and every week and every month and every year, and it, man, by the time you hit 20, 30 years of marriage, the love and affection and just the overabundance of love that you have for your spouse just from taking time every day to think about how you, he goes into that too, of like how you cherish your spouse how you think about cherishing your spouse. Like, take time to think about cherishing your spouse as opposed to just, well, what do I need to do to show her love today? It's really good. I would highly recommend it.
Good stuff. Good stuff. I've not read that one either. So another one from my list. Gary Thomas, I'm very familiar with in his stuff.
He has another like more popular marriage book than that one. This is one of the smaller ones, but this is the one I've read and I thought it was really good.
Okay. Good stuff. Here's the last one. This is going to be a weird one for some people, but Rethinking Sexuality from Dr. Julie Slattery. God's Design and Why It Matters. You may think that's really weird. This is a top five book for me just in general. Not just most impactful, like top five book. The way she breaks it down, yes, this is what I specialize in my therapy practice, sex addiction and all things sexuality related. I'm passionate about the subject. This is just so good. It's one of those that like turns everything on its head of like, we really know nothing about sexuality when it comes to Christianity. We just don't talk about it. We avoid it. This is what put it on the map for me of like, it is incredibly important and it is incredibly godly and spiritual and a perfect thing to do. But here's how we ought to be viewing it. And so I would highly, highly recommend Rethinking Sexuality by Julie Slattery. I'm looking through. I've highlighted or marked up this book quite a bit. I do use it every day for work. But if you're interested in anything surrounding that, especially for those that are going to get married and those that maybe have some weird or some negative views of sex, I would go out and get this one.
Good stuff. My last one is one that I have read within the last 2 months. Dave Ramsey's Complete Guide to Money. I'm sure Joe is shocked that I have some kind of financial money book.
Definitely haven't read that one.
On this list. So obviously Dave Ramsey, very prominent figure in the finance world and a guy that I've been familiar with for a while, but I never read any of his stuff until a couple months ago. I sat down and just read this book and man, I flew through this book. This one was 320 something pages and I flew through it, but man, he goes into so much here. The cash flow for your house, how obviously budgeting, how you get out of debt, what should you do about credit, what should you do about your buying decisions, how to handle insurance decisions, how you understand investments and planning for retirement, college. Like, it literally is just a guide to money, how to do this, how to do that. There's things that maybe I don't fully agree with, but man, I think he hits about 90 to 95% of it out of the park. And the reason this was so impactful is because it really woke me up to the idea of you must have a plan for everything. You must have a plan for every single dollar, at least if you want to hit a certain goal. If you want to get to retirement, if you want to leave things for your kids, if you want to get to a point where you can spend time later in life serving, going on mission trips and not be tied down to an 8-to-5 job, then that's a great goal to have. You got to start now and you got to start planning for it. And once again, just how much time we think about money in day-to-day life and how much money can impact us. This book really just took everything, again, insurance, retirement, planning for college, like everything you could think of, how to do a monthly budget, and gave you a how-to guide how to do it. He comes across very much like, you know, he knows how to do everything the exact way. There's not a lot of humility with Dave Ramsey. That'd be my one big complaint with him, but he obviously knows what he's talking about in an enormous sense. He knows what he's talking about. And so I sent this to my siblings and said, hey guys, you really have to read this. I'd recommend it if you're 17, 18, I mean, any age, but obviously if you are not yet married, not yet with kids, read this one. It'll at least give you a really good foundation for staying out of debt and budgeting for your household and all that. So definitely non-spiritual book, but definitely made my top seven.
I'm very much going to get a hold of that and to read that one. So the reason why we did this is, yes, these are most impactful. And I was realizing as I put together my list. Like, what got me started in reading, what helped me get out of addiction, what helps me live life, the atomic habits every day, my marriage, my parenting, the church, and my work.
That's really good, yeah.
That's the way that mine kind of broke down. I think yours actually breaks down similarly with your work, with finances and how you live your life, with how you approach God, with how you live as a father, right? With our lives as Christians and making sure we're shoring up our faith. So with each of these, we just wanted to give you an understanding of there's so many good books out there. There's so many impactful books out there and things that can really shape your understanding of stuff. And if the only way you're shaping your understanding is a quick Instagram or TikTok video,
YouTube video.
Yeah, YouTube video, if that's all you're getting, those that can help from time to time. That can give you tidbits. When you dig into a subject, it really is something special. The one that I did not put on here that I think matter of fact, I laid it aside and forgot to...
I wanted him to. I thought it'd be good.
No, there's two different ones. The one I laid aside was The Real Lincoln by Tom DeLorenzo. And that helps shape your understanding of we don't know anything about history. It actually shows how Abraham Lincoln was pretty much the bad guy of the Civil War and was not a good president, and at least probably one of the worst presidents. Pretty hot take on there, but great book. I've read that a couple times. And the other one, though, is The Manmaker Project, and if I could say anything, I have not finished the book. I am still reading through it, so I don't have it on the list because I can't vouch for everything in there, but I'm 100 and maybe 180 pages, something like that, into the book. It is one of the most impactful books I have ever read in my life in terms of raising boys and helping them, so I don't have it with me. I laid it aside, and I spaced it when I left today to come here, so I don't know where I put it. I was thinking through, like, where did that go? Because I thought I laid it aside on this stack, but I didn't. So, yeah, The Manmaker Project by Chris Bruno, I believe it is. That would be the only other one I'd add to this that I would put top echelon. Like, if you do have boys or if you were going to have kids, and they're obviously you don't know if you're going to have boys or girls, read that one. For those that don't even that don't even have boys or whatever else, it can still help because we're men, and it goes into father wounds, and it goes into creating, like, the whole point is making people men, right? Boys are born, men are created, I think, or men are made is what he says. And so it's rites of passage, and for us boys, it is, for us guys, godly men, it is so impactful as to we didn't really get rites of passage. How do we know we're men? And he goes into that and why it's so important to establish it. I will be doing that for my boys, is giving them rites of passage. It has just changed my thinking in a lot of areas. And that's something that we obviously have on this podcast. We will be shifting more into in Focus Press is helping raise godly men and helping godly fathers and everything else. We're going to be doing more on that. So I'm passionate about that one, not just because I'm reading it right now. It is changing my life. I forgot to put that on here. That's an eighth one, I suppose, a bonus one. But The Manmaker Project.
Good stuff. Read books. Read these books if you're able to. Again, I know not everybody's a big reader. We're big believers in it, and so take that for what you will. Comments. We'd love to know what books have impacted you. I speak for myself here. I love adding books to my list. Joe's got like 1,000 books, and so his list
way
is
too many.
1,000 pages long at this point. But yeah, I love getting to see what are people reading, what has kind of changed people's thinking, changed people's lives, impacted in a positive way. So leave your comments with that. We're going to wrap right there. This has been episode 89 of the Godly Young Men podcast. We are so grateful for you joining, as always. We'll be back next week.